Drive into summer savings at Burr Brothers Tire and Service with unbeatable discounts on all major tire brands like Goodyear, Bridgestone, Firestone, Pirelli, and more. Visit any Burr Brothers today because these summer tire deals are hot and won't last long. Burr Brothers Tire and Service. Complete auto care done better.
You're free now. Free to stream beyond your wildest dreams. Free to be everything you imagine and then some. That's how it feels to have Quantum Fiber. Your world unleashed. Learn more at quantumfiber.com. Limited availability. Service in select locations only.
Sunday. It's Sunday morning.
I love mornings.
The games are over and we're breaking it all down. This is your Morning After podcast with all the insight and analysis on the Utes, Cougars, and Aggies. Presented by UCCU. Love where you bank. The Morning After podcast with Hans, Scotty, and Lloyd Cole begins right now.
And you gave us an opportunity to come in here and show what we're made of.
On 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.
Welcome in. It's another edition of your Morning After podcast. Hans Olsen, Scott Girard, Lloyd Cole. All right, the magic number, 35-6. Utah, BYU, both going down by the same score. Hans, you're in Austin, Texas. You watched that game. We all sat back and watched the Utah game. It was ugly on both fronts. It felt like the BYU game had a little bit more of a chance to be close, but in the end just couldn't get it done. So where do you guys want to start? Yeah. You want to go BYU or Utah out of the gate?
Yeah, let's start BYU just because I'm fresh out of the stadium and got a few thoughts. I'm actually still right outside of the stadium in the car. So I can't quite wrap my head around what is going on offensively with BYU. And Lloyd and Scotty, I just kind of want to hand it over to you guys. Like, Aaron Roderick has been a good offensive coordinator, right?
And yes,
Fessy Fataki, he's been a really good wide receiver coach. So what am I missing with this offense? What is happening with this offense that maybe I'm too close to it and I can't quite see it, but it is dysfunctional.
Well, here's my two cents, and Lloyd, you can jump in as well. My thought is, and this is not a personal attack on Keaton Slovis, but is there, and all year long we've heard it, and I've kind of put it in the background and thought, okay, well, I mean, Keaton Slovis is still a good quarterback, even though he's not the dual threat that Zach Wilson and Jaren Hall, and certainly not the quality of quarterback that those two were, but certainly didn't have the element of a dual threat quarterback where you had to really worry about them and their feet. Keaton Slovis does not bring any of that to the table, and Keaton Slovis really, really struggled. And Hans, you can verify it more than I can because you saw it in person, but Lloyd, I guess maybe there's truth to that. Maybe it's the fact that A, Keaton Slovis isn't as good as those two, and two, he just doesn't have the mobility that those two had.
Yeah, no, I don't think Keaton, he's definitely not those two. And I mean, I wasn't high necessarily on Keaton when he came in to BYU, but I thought, I was like, finding a vet in the transfer portal, you know, that's gonna really move them. I mean, we've seen it. Hans, you brought it up with transfer quarterbacks that Utah's brought in, and it's been been an area where they struggled. It didn't, you know, they weren't able to do it. And Keaton hasn't really worked. You know, he was at Pitt, and they're gonna tailor an offense around him, and it didn't work there. And you know, it's just. He needs to have a run game. I think he works a lot better. If they're good in the run game, then I think he can be better. But that hasn't been the case. They haven't had a run game.
That's a good point. Like so he can't run, but if he can't run, you better have a really good run game.
Absolutely.
They don't have the run game, and they don't have a quarterback that can run. And is a problem. I'll tell you what's becoming a real problem, guys, is third downs have become a real issue for BYU. They were 3 of 14 in this game against Texas, and you know they faced multiple third and 11s. Their third down starting position was 7.8 yards per third down.
I know that's a number. So, Greg really keeps a close eye on, doesn't he?
He does, yeah, because you know the third down situation at BYU, they're 127th in the country. This is going to drop them. Well, they're right below 30% in conversion, Scotty, which nationally, how bad is that? I mean, 127th, but that's the basement.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, give me a second and I'll see how far in the basement that is. But yeah, that's not good.
I don't know. Will the 3 of 14, will that show? Probably not.
I don't know if that's going to show or not. Hold on. Let me see if they've updated stats on the national site yet.
Show a seven game sample size, which will put them at 30%. I think they've been like 28 of 93 or 95 or something like that.
Yeah, they came into the game. Yep. 28 of 93 at 30%. And obviously yesterday is not going to help them at all.
Oh, no. It's not. It's bad. 3 of 14. And, you know, four games left now in the season, and I'm not saying it's a wholesale change. Like, you don't just bench Keaton and find something. But, guys, this has been one of the worst offenses, both in the run game and multiple categories in the country. And you got four games left to try to find bowl eligibility and a couple wins too. You want to beat West Virginia coming up next weekend, and you want to beat Iowa State. I'm not saying it's a wholesale change, but there has to be something that gives you hope and shows improvement. Whether that's bringing in Jake Retzlaff, or that's putting in some type of wildcat wrinkle, or something, just finding an athlete that wants to get it done offensively. They got to do it. They got to do it, because these performances, six points, it's terrible. And I felt like BYU's defense gave them a chance.
Absolutely, they did.
They had two goal line stops on the 1 or 2 yard line that were awesome. Jacob Robinson defeats a block and gets to the outside and tackles that big tight end that Texas has. And then Jackson Cravens works off a block on 4th and 1. He works off a block off the left side, finds an open gap on the right side, and just meets Jonathan Brooks right there in the hole and knocks him back. And it was awesome. They did so many things, forced 2 turnovers, 1 interception. Crew Wakely came up with an interception, and then they hit Malik in the backfield and caused a fumble. And it's like they did it all, Scotty. But this offense, it's just really hard. It's just struggling.
Well,
is it a matter of them maybe just not having? I mean, we talked about the transition Utah had to make into the Pac-12, and BYU's got to make that same transition. Like they need they need more to add more athletes on offense, and I think they have some nice pieces, but they still need to add. There's still going to be this transition period.
So, listen to this, guys. If you take BYU away from the four newcomers, the newcomers are 1 and 14.
Woo!
There's only one win amongst the other three newcomers. That's Houston. And remember, that was the long bomb to West Virginia.
Yeah.
Other than that, Cincinnati loses tonight last night to Oklahoma State. Central Florida, they lost, so they're 0-5. Cincinnati's 0-5. And then Houston, only that long bomb to West Virginia, they're 1-4. So to your point, Lloyd, yeah, I think all of them are in this adjustment period, and all of them are kind of get slapped in the face a little bit.
There's obviously a lot of growing up to do for BYU, and with depth and everything else, it's got to come along with it. But the problem is that we see a lot of really good pieces in place, and there's, I want to get your thoughts on this, Hans, because I do think that there are certain moments in a game that really kind of turn things upside down. And while I don't think BYU beats Texas, but there was a moment where I really felt like they really shot themselves in the foot to really make things a lot more interesting. And I don't know if it was 14-0 or 7-0, but Crew Wakely gets that long interception, takes it all the way down to the 10-yard line, and you're knocking on the door. But yet you got a, you know, you got an illegal block that puts it all the way back at your own, what, 38-40-yard line. And great, you got the interception, but you know, if BYU's down at the 10-yard line and they're able to punch that thing in and come away with points, and then the momentum shifts. And you tell me all the time, football is such a game of momentum, and it just took the wind out of your sails there when you had an opportunity to put points on the board, and instead you have to start on your minus side of the 50 after what could have been starting at the 10. It's little things like that that really surprised me that BYU shot themselves in the foot so much today.
That is, by the way, that is the moment, dude. That is it. And that set them back. And then Keaton Slovis throws a pick.
Yes. Yep.
On that possession.
You're right.
And gives it right back to Texas and all the momentum and everything that was with it. And I turned to Greg in the break and I said, just think if that started on the 10. Because Aaron Roderick, the one thing his offense does well is he scores when they're in the red zone. They do. They score well in the red zone. And they were deep in that red zone off of that interception and that return. And you're right, man. It was just a shot in the side. And we talked last week about Texas's special teams and how BYU has got to win the special teams battle. Texas punked them in the special teams. A punt return for a touchdown, multiple short starting fields, you know, keeping BYU inside the 15 on a lot of their drives and on the start of a lot of their drives. And it was really, really tough in that moment when you got the pick, you think you're going to be in the red zone, you make it a one score game, and there's the big block in the back that brings you back. And then the interception, and then it did offensively, it tumbled after that.
So BYU suffers the loss. Is your concern level higher than it was going into this game, Lloyd, or do you still have the same opinion? Because let's be honest, I mean, BYU came into this game as an 18-point underdog. They're not supposed to win this game. Do you feel less about BYU today than you did going into this one?
No, they're going, and guess what? I still firmly believe they're going to be bowl eligible. And guess what? I think we are looking at that as being a win for them this year. Like they, did we think maybe there might be a chance that they might be able to somehow pull this one out, even though they're big time underdogs? I think there was maybe a thought of, there was a feeling that they maybe somehow they could do it. I mean, going up against a backup quarterback, maybe it could be done. But hell, we had that same feeling about Utah and Oregon that maybe they could do it. And look how that one went. So, like, I don't think anything different about them. I think they need to catch up in the arms race of athletes. And guess what? They will.
Yeah.
Hey, if Ewers doesn't come back, Texas will lose two of their last four.
Not impressed with that quarterback.
Yeah, wasn't. Right.
No. He's not good. Two turnovers. BYU lost in the turnover battle. Keaton Slovis was responsible for all three turnovers, even though one was a strip sack where there was a miscommunication and he got hit from behind in a strip sack, and one was a batted ball interception. And there were some tough things that happened in this game. One of them was off of the receiver's fingertips for an interception, but I thought that Malik Murphy he's got a lot of holes in his game. And I think that Texas, they'll at least lose one of the next four if Quinn Ewers isn't back, but possibly two of the next four. Yeah.
All right, let's shift gears. from one 35-6 loss to another 35-6 loss. And this one really felt like it got out of hand and was never really ever in doubt. And I guess the, you know, the theme of today is inadequate offense. And Oregon jumps out to a 14-3 lead at the end of the first quarter, 21-6 at halftime, 35-6 at the end of the third quarter. And offensively, Utah was just a mess today and just could never get it going. And Lloyd, I know that you, you're out of town, unable to host the pre and post, but that one just felt like Utah had a lot of momentum after that USC game, had game day, all the emotions. And then after the first couple drives, just went, just fell apart.
Yeah, I think Kyle Whittingham summed it up best after that game, where he kind of compared it to the infamous 47-7 loss to TCU back in 2010. Like, that's how that one felt like. Like, if you remember that game, that one got out of hand fast, like quickly, just like that. Before you knew it, it was a track race, and the only one running was the opponent. And Utah didn't have an answer. That, you know, I'll tell you what, that offense, that Oregon offense is good. They're all about those short passes, and then eventually they catch deep. And you know what? They got it out. Bo Nix gets it out quick. They couldn't even get to him. Like, they got exactly zero sacks. They didn't get a sack on him. Like, they could not get to him. And the fact that the defense wasn't able to get any pressure on him, he was very comfortable back there, and yeah, that offense could not keep up. And we knew Bryson Barnes wasn't going to be able to go out there and keep up with Bo Nix. It was going to need the defense was going to need to, you know, make some plays and get some turnovers and keep them somewhat in it. And they got some stops. They did get some stops in that, especially in that first half. But the thing is, they couldn't get anything going on offense. Yeah. They couldn't capitalize. I mean, there was a chance where they could, you know, they go in 21-6 at halftime, and you're thinking, well, maybe, because they got that field goal late, and you're thinking, well, maybe if they come out, because they get the ball in the second half, they come out and score, and maybe it's an 8-point game, and then you're in it. But it just wasn't happening.
Hans, if I were to tell you on Thursday with Frank Dolce that the Utes would have 99 yards rushing and a 2.8 yard average, and Oregon would have a 5.3 yard average, you'd say the score is exactly what you thought it would be.
A blowout. Yeah, I'd say it is exactly what it turned out to be with those numbers that you just gave me. But I also probably wouldn't believe you that would have been the numbers.
Yeah.
Hans, this is what I'm saying is going to happen on Saturday. I'd say, nah, that doesn't sound right, because, you know, you found Sione Vaki and you know what he can do. And I'm giving the ball to Jaquinda Jackson, but I'm kind of burying Jalen Glover. I'm not really pushing the ball to Jalen Glover. But that's just not how it turned out. Jaquinda had plenty of carries, but what happened with Sione Vaki? Why did he only end up with 11 offensive yards total?
Yeah, I mean,
he only ran the ball five times.
What I set the number at, over under 145 yards total, and yeah. Oh, geez. So much for that.
Yeah, what happened?
Guess how many receptions he had?
Zero.
Zero. He was not involved. It felt like I'm gonna have to rewatch it a little bit, but they took him out of it. Like, he was non-existent.
You know, the other.
So you feel like Oregon planned him out of it?
911, emergency.
They kidnapped my son.
What would you do if your child disappeared and someone you trusted was responsible?
We thought he cared for McKay, when in fact, he didn't care for anyone.
Listen to Ransom now at ransompodcast.com.
Two young fathers are shot to death outside an iconic Utah restaurant.
I said, your dad has been hurt really bad.
The grief was disorienting for those left behind, until one choice changed everything.
I just remember writing this letter, and it wasn't me writing it.
Can a personal decision shape generations?
We're all falling for this guy's trick.
I'm Amy Donaldson. Season 2 of The Letter, Ripple Effect, is available now Follow us at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
I think it was a mix of, I mean, I don't know, like it seemed like they got so far behind, and they just, I don't know if you know, some of those, him out coming out of the backfield wasn't open or what, but it became, I mean, Utah became exactly what they did want to become, and that was a passing team. Barnes had 29 attempts. You have 29 attempts with Barnes, and that's not going to go well. They only rushed. Let's see. You had Glover 9 for 39, Jackson 12 for 37. He came up a little gimpy in that first half.
Oh, concerned about that.
Out.
No, they had 30.
Yeah, he came out limping again.
They had 36 carries for 99 yards, and including nine,
Barnes had nine
for
of
Barnes,
those.
And you know, you throw sacks in there, and so that can be a little misleading. So to guys that were not named Bryson Barnes, they had 21, 25, 26 carries. Or 27 carries, excuse me.
Wouldn't have thought that'd be it.
The game plan seemed a little weird. And it just, but then again, you know what? Hands, when you're down 14-3 out of the gate, it just kind of makes you change who you are a little bit with your identity offensively, right?
Yeah. No, there's.
But you wouldn't think it would change. Like, he's still like a big part of your offense. Like, he's supposed to be. Like, you wouldn't think that. I mean, you still got to try to. You can't just completely abandon not getting him involved. Like, it's obvious that he's become a big part. So I'm not sure exactly why they exactly meant why he only got that amount of touches.
Here's the other.
Screen.
And then you look on the defensive side, and I think you saw, I mean, look, Lavani Damouni ended up with 11 tackles in this game, but the Utes, as Lloyd Penn mentioned, zero sacks, but add to that only one TFL. One TFL for a team that had been racking up TFL after TFL and just had nothing in this game today in terms of causing disruption in the backfield. And
well, we talked about that in the week too, Scotty. Oregon, I think, had given up four sacks, was it?
Yep.
And they were one of the lowest in the country in giving up TFLs. They just don't. But remember, we were talking about those numbers, and I was like, well, something's got to break in this one, because you got one of the best in the country to do it, and then you got, on the other side, one of the best in the country to protect against it. Well, Oregon just won the protection battle, which, you know, I'm going largely off numbers, obviously, because I haven't had a chance to dive in and analyze the film. But going off numbers, it's like, geez, Oregon got them. They sealed up that pocket. They did. Lloyd, was there a lot of pressure? Scotty, was there a lot of pressure that was given up at least?
There was some pressure. Yep. I mean, wait a minute. Are you talking about Oregon giving up pressure?
Utah getting pressure. Yeah.
No.
Oregon giving up pressure.
It never felt like that at all, in my opinion. And I was going back and forth, and you're right. I'll do a deeper dive as well. And Lloyd, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but it never really felt as if any time Utah was consistently getting in the backfield. And, you know, because, you know, there's not a lot of QBHs, not a lot of, you know, knocking him down after a pass. It just wasn't that tonight.
No, it was a clean pocket, and he was dealing, but Bo Nix was dealing. I mean, he finished 24 of 31, 248 yards. Like, it was, you know, he was dealing, and they weren't getting any, they weren't really getting much pressure on him. He had the ball out quick. That was kind of how they offset it, I think.
Hey, we talk about the turnover battle. I'm just looking here, and Oregon won the turnover battle. They were plus one. Two interceptions thrown by Bryson Barnes. What were those picks? Were those Bryson inaccuracies or?
Yeah, there was one early. There was one early Sione was, and I'm trying to think what the route it is. He cut the route off short.
Yeah, he stopped. And he should have kept, you know, Bryson thinks he's going to keep running the slant across the middle. And the receiver cut it short and just stopped and throw right to him. And looking at, you try to read body language, Lloyd, and I just saw, you know, because usually quarterbacks don't like throwing interceptions, and they really don't like throwing interceptions when it's not their fault. And so I was trying to read the body language of Bryson Barnes after he threw it, and he just had this grimace look on his face, and he didn't go over there and start barking at the guy and say, hey, keep running. You know, the adjustment we make on that. So I don't know if Bryson, that was an acknowledgement that it was his fault, or if it wasn't, but either way, just horrible miscommunication on that INT.
There was a view of him saying something. I'm not a lip reader, but almost looked like something like he said, you got to keep going or something like that. So it looked like it was possibly a Sione issue. I'm not for sure on that. But that's kind of what it looked like. But by the way, you look at 35-6 and you would think, here's kind of a weird, you're always looking for these weird stats. Utah won the time of possession. That's how quick like Oregon scored. Like they won it like 31-28, 31 something to like 28 something. They won the time of possession, which is kind of weird.
Yeah. I mean, this is one of those games where you come back down to earth a little bit, and there was a lot of hype last week. This was as fun of a week of preparing for college football hands that we've ever been a part of, with Utah and BYU playing marquee conference games in late October. And then sometimes you just get a good old dose of reality and say, okay, you know what? Oregon is a college football playoff contending team, and probably should have beat Washington. And Christian Cox said on the postgame show, hey, look, if those two teams play again in a neutral site in Vegas, I think Oregon beats Washington. And frankly, I don't disagree with him. Then you got Texas, who, you know, Texas is right there near the top. They've got, you know, they're missing a quarterback, but overall, you know, Ans, you're a great evaluator talent. You saw the speed and athleticism and physicality that they bring to the table. And sometimes you just go, okay, that's what we're up against. And that's a cold, loaded, hard reality sometimes.
Yeah. Loaded, just stacked to the gills. They rotated, I want to say, 8 different defensive linemen. Like, and they're all big and all athletic and kept fresh legs. And I actually think that got to BYU a little bit, because Slovis took a lot of shots, man. But, yeah, athletes across the board. That guy that returned the punt, lightning fast.
Yeah.
Yeah, their backup quarterback, 6'5", 245. Built like a Greek god. He didn't play really well, but still, he just pure athlete, and they got the job done. And Oregon's the same way. Stocked on their lines. How about Oregon's offensive and defensive lines? Yeah. They're just stellar right now.
Their defense was, and I get it, Utah's, you know, they don't have that quarterback. You have Cam Rising, but we can't keep going to this. But you know what? That Oregon defense was pretty good. Like, it really was. They got after. That line was good. And that defense, like, Dan Lanning's got, he's building something there.
Oh, yeah. No, they needed to add a little toughness and a little nasty to that Oregon team. And boy, they've done it. They've absolutely done it with Dan Lanning. All right, gentlemen. Hans, how was the trip? Did you get the barbecue?
No, actually, Tex-Mex.
Okay.
You hit the Tex-Mex.
Did you say you went to a teppanyaki?
No. Tex-Mex. Did some tamales. Did some queso. Some enchiladas. It was,
you just have
really
weapons.
Really good.
Some chile rellenos.
Hey, by the way, did you guys see Kansas knocked off Oklahoma?
Yes.
Yeah. It was only a matter of time Oklahoma was going to go down.
Yeah, I kind of felt like they were playing with fire a little bit. So there's no undefeated teams left in the Big 12.
No.
Hey, did you see you get abused on game day a little bit?
Yeah, I did. That's not what that promotion was supposed to be.
I totally agree.
I don't know, man. That seems like $250 well spent. I'm not going to lie. That was pretty cool.
I know, but they didn't even mention the zone.
Oh, there was a little zone in there, I think, wasn't there?
I'm
about to look really close.
Lloyd, are you gonna deny these people their money because of this?
don't you dare put this on me. I just thought there was something you had to do something with the zone. Like, don't get me wrong, that hands his head on a Tatanka was great.
Yeah.
Guy on a buffalo. Have you guys ever watched the guy on a buffalo video? Guy on a buffalo.
All right, so at least the Tex-Mex.
I think they deserve it.
The Tex-Mex was good, though, right?
It was absolutely perfection. It was so delicious. They know how to do queso down here. You know what's weird? The queso down here is like a really thick, creamy, cheesy cream of broccoli soup.
Well, that doesn't sound appealing.
Yeah, it was really good.
Yeah, I like broccoli, but I don't know. That just doesn't sound very Tex-Mex-ish.
No, it's dang good, man. I loved every bite of it. But there was over 100,000 people in that stadium. I think the announced attendance was like 103,000, something like that. It's crazy how many people they could pack into that place.
Where does that stadium rank with some of the others you've seen this year?
Well, as far as the stinking booth to call the game, that thing's in the basement.
Oh, yeah.
Garbage booth to call a game. I can't believe where they put us.
Dude, some of those big stadiums, yeah. Like the most miserable game experience, and not just because of the heat, but because of the amenities and where they put us, was LSU. I've never been in a worse press box, and that's supposed to be like the cream of the crop, SEC. By far and away the worst booth I've ever been in, and that's all the Mountain West Conference schools. That didn't even include San Jose State. It was awful. And so it doesn't surprise me, because there's a little gamesmanship, like, screw these guys. Maybe, you know, let's give them the.
Yeah.
It's just dumb. But as far as, because I spent a lot of time just outside the stadium going around talking to BYU fans, talking to Texas fans. And, it probably edges out Arkansas. Arkansas was incredible, but. And that was early season Arkansas before they all realized they sucked. I'm sure nobody goes out to those games right now, but it, this environment rivals everything. Scott, you've been out to this stadium, right? Lloyd, you been out here?
No, I've not been to Texas. I've not.
I've not been to Texas either.
It's as good a college football environment as you'll ever find. I gotta imagine. I mean, I've never seen anything that beats it. That Nebraska environment when we were all three out there, that was pretty dang fun. I mean, I'd say it's akin to that.
Oh. All right. Well, that wraps it up for us. Enjoy your Sunday, everybody. Look forward to chatting with you on Monday. Remember, we will be live here in Bountiful, El Matador. So make sure to come by and say hi, a Utah staple for over 50 years. We'd love for you to chat with us and grab some of their queso and check out some of the great food that's available for you again at El Matador. We'll be there from noon to three. But again, as always, big thanks to UCCU. Love Where You Bank, a proud presenting sponsor of the Morning After podcast. And safe travels back. I know you're catching a flight later this afternoon and heading back to Utah. Lloyd, we will chat with you sometime next week. Hope your travels are well, go as well, too. Hey, what have you been eating down there, by the way? Speaking of Tex-Mex.
We have not made it into to Santa Fe yet, but we're in Durango. So we just, nothing crazy yet, but as soon as I get to Santa Fe tomorrow, it's on. Going to be getting some excellent Mexican food. I will not be going to a teppanyaki. It'll be nonstop green chili for every meal.
Well, I mean, that's,
I can promise you that
if you were in Albuquerque, I could hook you up with a good teppanyaki place.
Nope. Won't be doing it.
Right on.
So I am going to, every meal will be a special meal while I'm down here.
All right. Well, sounds good. Gentlemen, be safe. We'll see you all on Monday. That's your Morning After podcast. Hans, Scotty, and Lloyd right here on 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.
This has been your Morning After podcast with Hans, Scotty, and Lloyd Cole. Presented by UCCU. Love where you bag. Catch more of the Hans and Scotty Show weekdays from noon to 3. And in podcast form by searching Hans and Scotty on your podcasting platform of choice. This is 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.
911, emergency.
They kidnapped my son.
What would you do if your child disappeared and someone you trusted was responsible?
We thought he cared for McKay, when in fact he didn't care for anyone.
Listen to Ransom now at ransompodcast.com.
Two young fathers are shot to death outside an iconic Utah restaurant.
I said, your dad has been hurt really bad.
The grief was disorienting for those left behind, until one choice changed everything.
I just remember writing this letter, and it wasn't me writing it.
Can a personal decision shape generations?
We're all falling for this guy's trick.
I'm Amy Donaldson. Season 2 of The Letter, Ripple Effect, is available now. Follow us at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.